afterwards is that
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Machchatamagata prana Bodhayanta parasparam
Bodhayanta parasparam
Katayantasya mam nityam
Katayantasya mam nityam
Prashyanti charamanti cha
Prashyanti charamanti cha
Machchatamagata prana
Machchatamagata prana
Bodhayanta parasparam
Bodhayanta parasparam
Katayantasya mam nityam Prashyanti charamanti cha Machchitamagata prana Bodhayanta parasparam Katayantasya mam nityam Prashyanti charamanti cha
Their minds fully engaged in me.
Matgata prana.
Their lives devoted to me.
Bodhayanta.
Preaching.
Parasparam.
Among themselves.
Katayanta.
Talking.
Cha,
also,
mam,
about me,
nityam,
perpetually,
tashyanti,
become pleased,
cha,
also,
ramanti,
enjoy transcendental bliss,
cha,
also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to me, to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Purport. Pure devotees, whose characteristics are mentioned here, engage themselves fully in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their minds cannot be diverted from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their talks are solely on the transcendental subjects. The symptoms of the pure devotees are described in this verse specifically. The devotees of the Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in glorifying the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna, and they take pleasure in discussing Him with other devotees. Note that word submerged. It's like being underwater. So, just imagine this huge ocean of nectar. The devotees are always submerged in that ocean of nectar. They never come up out of the water. They always stay down in the water. 24 hours a day, they're submerged in that water of Krishna Katha. So you can see if you're a devotee or not. A devotee is someone who's always engaged in Krishna Katha. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself. And in the mature stage, they're actually situated in the love of God. Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection which is exhibited by the Lord in His abode. Lord Chaitanya likens transcendental devotional service to the sowing of a seed in the heart of the living entity. There are innumerable living entities traveling throughout the different planets of the universe, and out of them there are few who are fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee and get the chance to understand devotional service. This devotional service is like a seed, and that it is sown in the heart of a living entity. And if he goes on hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Hare Hare,
that seed fructifies, just as the seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. The spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it penetrates the covering of the material universe and enters into the Brahmajyoti effulgence in the spiritual sky. In the spiritual sky, also that plant grows more and more until it reaches the highest planet, which is called Goloka Vrindavan, supreme planet of Krishna. Ultimately, the plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and rests there. Gradually, as a plant grows fruits and flowers, that plant of devotional service also produces fruits, and the watering process in the form of chanting and hearing goes on. This plan of devotional service is fully described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19. It is explained there that when the complete plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one becomes fully absorbed in love of God. Then he cannot live even for a moment without being in contact with the Supreme Lord, just as a fish cannot live without water. In such a state, the devotee actually attains the transcendental qualities in contact with the Supreme Lord. The Srimad Bhagavatam is also full of such narrations about the relationship between the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is very dear to devotees. As stated in the Bhagavatam itself, 12:13-18, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. In this narration, there is nothing about material activities, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the only narration in which the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord and his devotees is fully described. Thus, the realized souls in Krishna consciousness take continual pleasure in hearing such transcendental literatures, just as a young boy and a young girl take pleasure in association. Om jnana timadanda dasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur militam yena tasmai shirvei namo. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of His Divine Loving Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who has come to me, who is standing in the darkness with my eyes tightly closed shut, and is forcing them open with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. So this is the second verse of the four key verses of the Bhagavad Gita. We studied the first of the first four, of the four I mean to say, last night. That was 10:08, so this is 10:09. This gives us some idea of what we're supposed to be doing 24 hours a day. If we are actually devotees, we will be absorbed in this Krishna Katha. We will not have any taste for mundane Katha. When I was in Vrindavan at the guest house we were staying, the worker behind the desk, I was shocked. In Vrindavan, he turned on the cricket game in Vrindavan. He turned on the cricket game and he said, don't do that in the dham, that pollutes the dham. He said, but Krishna played sports. Tried to argue with me. I said, turn it off. Krishna can do, but you cannot. We are not interested in playing mundane sports or listening to cricket games, you see. We have much more relishable sporting activities to participate in. This material world, sports is a big thing, isn't it? Cricket here and in the United States, football, basketball, you know, depending on the season. They have big, you know, the newspaper, they have a big section, the sports section. It's a big thing. They love this sporting. So, generally, what does sports mean? It means who will control the ball, isn't it? Who will control that ball? They win. So do you think that we are not in sports? We are playing the ultimate game. Do you know what is the ball? Do you know who the two teams are that are fighting to control the ball? The ball is planet Earth. And you have these suras and the asuras. You have the demons and the devotees. The demons are trying to control this planet. They're trying to kill the God consciousness of the world population. And the devotees are trying to revive the God consciousness of the world population. So, if you like sports, then we have a much bigger ball game to play. And it's called the Sankirtan movement. And it's sports. We are sports. We are big sportsters. We are playing a ball game that really matters. These other, who cares? It's irrelevant, really. You know, some one year some team gets the trophy, the next year another gets the trophy. What is it? What is the end result of it? It's actually a money-making business. Somebody makes some money. That's it. It's just a money. And what do they spend the money on? Sense gratification. And in spite of all of that sense gratification, what happens? They get old, they sick, and they die. That's all. So what is the end result of their sporting activities? Shama eva kevalam. Useless waste of time. But the sporting activity of the Sankirtan devotees, Lord Chaitanya's followers, you see, this sporting activity is very significant. This Sankirtan movement that Prabhupada has revived, taken out of its seed-like form in India and made a worldwide movement. This movement will go down in history for having saved the world in its darkest hour. Anyone who takes this Sankirtan movement very seriously, they become a spiritual revolutionary to transform the course of human history. So this is serious business to be a preacher of Krishna consciousness. We are revolutionaries. We want not weapons, but, you know, like guns and bombs strapped around our waist. Not that kind of stupid thing. We are giving something even more revolutionary, and that is Bhagavad Gita. The real Bhagavad Gita, not this so-called Bhagavad Gita. That Krishna is the unborn, the unmanifest. If you want to surrender to Krishna, then you have to surrender to the unborn, the unmanifest that is within you and within me and within everything. That is Krishna. Krishna doesn't say that. Krishna says me. If I say, bring me a glass of water, you think, okay, I'll drink it myself. Because no. It means I'm thirsty, I need a glass of water, and you've already brought it. So we have to understand Bhagavad Gita as it is. And that is understood through the acharyas. We require guru, enlightened teacher. we see that the tendency to concoct is there, everyone. It's a modern tendency. If we try to invent some new understanding of Bhagavad Gita, it will be a failure. It will be doomed. We have to take Bhagavad Gita as it is, as Krishna originally intended it. So this is very sweet and very wonderful nectar here. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Just look at the language that's being used here. Dwell. Dwell means, where do you live? That's a very dear place, and there's no place like home, they say. That place where you dwell, that's your security. Get out of the hustle and bustle and you get to your dwelling place where everything is set up nicely. You have your cooking area, your eating area, your sleeping, bathing. Everything's nicely arranged for your comfort. That's the place of your dwelling. So the pure devotees, their thoughts are dwelling in Krishna. Their minds are always in Krishna. Dwelling in Krishna. So that dwelling means taking shelter of Krishna, finding great happiness, great comfort, great security, great enjoyment, wonderful loving relationship. This is rasa. They find that wonderful experience by always absorbing their thoughts in Krishna. Just like the lotus, the swan, he likes to wrap his neck, intertwine his neck with a lotus stem. He takes pleasure in playing around with a lotus stem, getting it twisted around his neck for fun. So the devotee, he gets himself all twisted up in Krishna for fun. He gets himself totally entangled in Krishna. In the second item, their lives are fully devoted to my service. Devotee has nothing else to do except serve Krishna. Nothing. He'll do anything for Krishna. So, how do you know what Krishna wants? Well, people will concoct their own idea. Well, I think Krishna, but that's not service. You have to know what Krishna wants by reading his instructions. You think, well, I think Krishna would like this, or I think Krishna would like that. You may be wrong. Don't manufacture your own way of serving Krishna. Mahajana yena gupta sapanta. You have to follow the pathway tread by the previous acharyas. Follow that system. Even Krishna, when he was talking to Arjuna, he said that very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you. Krishna is repeating something that was told by the ancients, and that he said that 5,000 years ago, that ancient science. So how ancient is this science that 5,000 years ago Krishna called it ancient? So do you think now we can reinvent this ancient science? We can make a new version. We can modify it to suit our sense gratification. That's what people want to do. People want to take this philosophy of Krishna consciousness and they want to modernize it. They say, well, times have changed since Prabhupada gave it to us, so now we have to modernize it. The Prabhupada did, it was 5,000 years after Krishna gave it, and Prabhupada didn't think to modernize it. After 5,000 years, so why 30 years later we should modernize it? Doesn't make sense. Whatever is given here was an ancient science 5,000 years ago, and it was still relevant when Krishna spoke it to Arjuna. It was still relevant when Prabhupada gave it to us 30 years ago. And it's still relevant right now, and it will be relevant for 10,000 years at least in this universe. Actually, it's eternally relevant. We have to be devoted to the service of Krishna. And the result, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about him. You say, well, that sounds good. I would like to have great satisfaction and bliss. But we have to note who is tasting it. Those persons who are always thinking of Krishna and always serving him. If you want the nectar, you have to pay the price. You have to purely absorb your thoughts, your words, and your actions in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes my disciples will write me a letter, they'll say, Gurudev, how can I serve you in the best possible way? So I tell them this. Spiritual master, when he initiates you, he takes the responsibility to deliver you back to Godhead. So if there are impurities within your heart and you have to take birth again, the spiritual master has to take birth again to save you also. So the best service you can do for your spiritual master is to become a pure devotee. So you're not troubling him with having to come and save you. You see. The very best service is that you become a pure devotee. And what does that mean? Thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, and their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So there's three things: your thoughts, your words, and your deeds. All covered in this verse. You see, this describes pure devotion in a nutshell. You're always thinking about Krishna, you're always talking about Krishna, and you're always acting in Krishna's service. Those three things. So that's how I train my disciples. Always think in a way that's pleasing to your guru and pleasing to Krishna. Always speak in such a way that is pleasing to your spiritual master and Krishna. And always act in such a way that's pleasing to your spiritual master and Krishna. In every time, every place, and every situation. That's pure bhakti. So you say, well, that's for advanced devotees. So I'm not advanced. You know the story when Guru Kripa Maharaj was the temple president there in, or GBC, I forget his position. He was there in Honolulu with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was up late night translating. He called for Guru Kripa Maharaj at the time, come to his room, his fortress where he was translating. He said, why are you sleeping? He said, Prabhupada, I'm working very hard during the day and I'm taking rest at night. It's 5 or 6 hours of rest according to your instructions. Prabhupada said, I'm not sleeping. Why are you sleeping? He said, well, you're a pure devotee, Prabhupada. He said, why are you not a pure devotee? Prabhupada started chastising him for not being a pure devotee in the middle of the night. And Prabhupada, and Guru Kripa has a bit of a tough fighting spirit, so he was getting a little angry, and Prabhupada just totally smashed him, defeated him, and he, to the point where he was crying. And then Prabhupada told him a Krishna story and said, okay, now go take a break. But just imagine the point that Prabhupada is making. You have to become a pure devotee. Prabhupada also told me in one letter, he said, pure devotee means no desire for karma, no desire for jnana, no desire for yoga. All material desire is nil. And then what did he say? He said, whether you can be like that. He challenged me whether I could do that or not. I had asked him if the desire to be a guru was a spiritual desire. Because it could be a material desire also. If someone wants to be a guru for name and fame, that's material. What if one wants to be a guru for the sake of saving people from the cycle of birth and death? And so I was wondering, is it as a material desire or a spiritual desire to be a spirit, want to desire to be a guru? I asked Prabhupada that. And he said it's a spiritual desire, but you have to become free from all material desire. Whether you can be like that, he challenged me. So that pressure is there. Prabhupada put the pressure on me, whether I can be a pure devotee. He put the pressure on Guru Kripa. Why are you not a pure devotee? And so we, each one of us has to learn how to put pressure on ourselves. Now that somebody else has to remind us, we have to learn how to put pressure on ourselves. The time of death, you fly your own airplane. How well you have trained yourself will be seen at the moment of death. You can say, well, that's Sankarshan Prabhu, I mean, that's, you know, I don't have to worry about it so much now, you know, I'm trying to get my degree. You know, that's way off in the future sometime. I mean, you don't have to worry about that. Wait a minute. Padam padam yadavatam late sham. Death can come at any minute. At any second we can leave this body. So are you prepared? Are you fixed in pure bhakti right now, at this very minute? You see, that's how we have to push ourselves. I have to come to the platform of pure bhakti right now. I may not have an hour to live. I must come to pure bhakti right now. Give up any desire for illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, gambling, profit, adoration, distinction. Just pray, my dear Srila Prabhupada, my dear Krishna, my dear Guru Maharaj, please bless me that I can come to pure bhakti right now. We should always be begging. And what is the best prayer for begging? For pure bhakti? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That's how we are chanting Hare Krishna. We are saying, my dear Lord Krishna, I have been suffering for millions of lifetimes in this horrible consciousness of sense enjoyment. Now I'm begging you, please take me out of this. Please rescue me from this hellish situation and engage me in your pure devotional service. That's what we're praying, chanting Hare Krishna. So when you chant your japa, that's the kind of mood we should have. Like a child crying to the mother, please save me from my hellish position. So, to the degree, this verse is talking about the Ramanti, they're enjoying it. They're getting nectar. So here's the insider secret. To the extent that you're pure, to that extent you will enjoy Krishna consciousness. To the extent that you hang on to the mood of material sense enjoyment, to that extent you will not be able to relish the nectar of Krishna consciousness. So do you see why it is essential, if you want to taste the nectar of Krishna consciousness, that you must give up the desire for material sense gratification and simply desire Krishna bhakti, nothing else. That's where the nectar is. It's not dry renunciation. It's the best trade you could ever make. Trade in material, it's like, you know, having an old ambassador and trading it in on a new Honda. You know? Having an old, you know, falling apart ambassador. that when every bump comes, you practically have a heart attack. It's so severe, you know. And get a nice, smooth Honda, you see. So it's like we're trading in our material sense gratification and getting pure Krishna consciousness. Pure Krishna consciousness is the sweetest nectar. It's a gulab jamun that has so much juice that it will fill up the whole universe and then it'll be oozing out of the universe. Krishna, the holy name of Krishna, the pure name, has so much nectar in it that it can fill up the whole universe and then be oozing out through the coverings. That's how much nectar is in one pure utterance of Hare Krishna. So we have to chant with that intensity. This light, there is a beam of light, and when a beam of light becomes very focused, what is that called? It is called laser beam. A laser beam can burn through metal, isn't it? Yes. So our consciousness has to become laser consciousness. So intensely absorbed in chanting Krishna's name that we can burn through metal. And what is that metal that is described in the Bhagavatam? Steel-framed heart. We have a heart which is encased in metal. It is so many thick layers of lust, anger, greed. It's just like a metal covering, a hard metal covering over the heart. That's how encrusted the lust, anger, and greed is. So therefore, we have to really, really intensify our chanting. Very, very intense chanting. Complete focus, total complete absorption. TCA. This is the day of acronyms. Modern world is a world of acronyms. So TCA, total complete absorption. TCAIKC, total complete absorption in Krishna consciousness. TCAIKC. This is where the nectar is. The more that we can do that, the more this movement will take off like a rocket. Because everyone's running around Bangalore trying to taste the nectar. Running here, running there, going for that nectar. That nightlife. They're so mad after nightlife, they don't mad if they was. We saw a traffic jam, there must have been 60 cars lined up, stopped at a dead stop as we were coming here. It was a huge queue of cars sitting there, not even moving. People are willing to get out and do all that just so they can get some nightlife. Bangalore, Saturday night, nightlife. That's how hard they're trying to enjoy the material world. If there was any nectar to be tasted in Bangalore on Saturday night, it was a long time ago, squeezed out of Bangalore. Punapunas charvita charvanam. Just like when we were doing Govardhan Parikrama, our favorite stop when we do the Govardhan Parikrama is after you leave Govardhan town, you all know, you do Govardhan. You leave Govardhan town, then you come for the last stretch. And to help you make that last stretch, there's all the sugar cane wallahs. And they put the sugar cane in once, twice, they keep running it through, get more and more and more and more juice out of it. And finally, when there's no juice left, they throw it in the field behind the stand. So some poor man, he may go back there and think, let me see if there's any juice left. And that machine is pretty heavy, very heavy metal, pressing very hard. Do you think with your teeth, you're going to get any more juice out of that sugar cane? No, it's all squeezed out, finished. all squeezed out by a heavy metal compressor. All that juice is gone. Punak punascharvata charvanana. So, do you think there's any nectar left here in Bangalore? There's only one place to get the nectar in Bangalore. That's right here. Don't get it anywhere else. Even up on the hill, they don't really have it. They put sand in the sweet rice up there by deviating from Brahma. This is where the nectar is. If you want the nectar, this is where you're going to get it. The unlimited nectar of pure Krishna bhakti is available right here, right now. Do you want it?
Yes.
Sorry. So now, take it. Take it. Are there any questions? As I said earlier today, you're mostly followers of Jai Pataka Swami here, isn't it? He is famous for asking questions in the class. Prabhupada noted that this Jai Pataka, he asked a very nice question. So if you're the Jai Pataka Anukas, then you must also be expert at asking very nice questions in the class. Otherwise, how can you claim to be Jai Pataka Anukas? So who has some question? First I'll get my hearing aids cranked up here. Aging bodies here. Have to be propped up sometime. Okay.
Can you please tell us something about characteristics of a pure devotee?
About?
Characteristics of a pure devotee.
The characteristics of a pure devotee are described here in this verse. Of course, there's also the list of 26 qualities. But this is very nice description of pure devotees right here. Very simple. They think about Krishna. Mm-hmm. Much chitta. Which is, chitta means consciousness, you see. Mat, mind, me. You see, mat chitta. The minds are engaged in me. Mat gata prana. Their lives are devoted to me. That means they're always serving me. Bodhiyanta paraspatam, always preaching amongst themselves, talking, katayanta. Okay. So the three main things are described here. Thoughts, words, and deeds. But then the more elaborate description is given there. I think it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. 26 qualities of the pure devotees are given. He's poet also. Actually, that poetic quality is there in everyone. Krishna is Uttama Shloka. He is that personality who is described in the choicest words, the choicest poetry. So a devotee naturally is poetic. So the more that you become Krishna conscious, your natural ability to describe Krishna in very choice words becomes developed. That's another characteristic. Prabhupada is very, very poetic. The way you read his books and the way he says things is extraordinary. He's an extraordinary wielder of words. You see. He's like a kshatriya, he's an expert wielder of weapons. The Brahmin, Vaishnava, is expert wielder of words. The kshatriya fights with weapons. The Brahmin fights with words. That is his weapon. So that is one characteristic. Another characteristic is expert. He's expert in everything. Even in material things, it's like a devotee may be a king, for example, like Parikshit Maharaj. He was very expert at managing his kingdom. Or he may be a businessman. Prabhupada said that if a Krishna conscious businessman, said, I read it in the Bhagavatam, he said he can aspire to be the wealthiest businessman in the whole world. So how will he do that? He has to be very, very expert in business dealings. So that is another characteristic. A pure devotee is expert at everything. Prabhupada is absolutely expert at everything he did, whether it's banking, writing, publishing, cooking, cleaning, everything. Deity worship, dealing with emergencies. Prabhupada is extremely expert. Like the time in London when the columns, they were doing the installation for Radha Ladan Ishwaran, the altar collapsed. These big, huge, heavy columns were crashing in on the deities. Can you imagine? And Prabhupada, with an old man's body, he went up there with incredible Herculean strength. He held the columns up to protect the deities. With his own body, he held the huge, heavy columns up so they didn't fall down on the deities. He was expert. Immediately he did just what needed to be done. So that's a characteristic of pure devotee. He's very, very expert. He's poetic. Prabhupada was poetic also in everything. His gestures, the way he... Everything about him is poetic. And I was with Prabhupada in Atlanta in 1975. The day I got my Brahmin thread, actually, was Bhakti Siddhanta's appearance day. And it was very wonderful. We got to watch Prabhupada offer arti to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There was no painting, so they had one flown in overnight from New York. And that painting is still in Atlanta now. I never went back to New York. But it's a nice painting of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada, they set up a Vyasasan next to Prabhupada's Vyasasan. And Prabhupada offered the arti. You know, I mean, you offer the water, and there's a little, a little bowl to put the water in. There was nothing to put the water in. And no one had it together to go get one. Everybody was just so enlivened to be there with Prabhupada, watching him offer the arti. And no one was able to bring Prabhupada a bowl to put the water into. So what's Prabhupada supposed to do? He's stuck there with no bowl to put the water in after offering it. So the Tulsi plant was at quite some distance with incredible deftness, with incredible expertise. Prabhupada just like, and the water went flying through the air and right into the Tulsi pot. So that is expert. He did it poetically. It was just like poetry in motion, you know. It's like a famous actor in a famous movie. You see, the classic scene from the classic movie. Like a little arch. Like that. So in this way, Prabhupada was expert and poetic in everything he did. Does not eat more than is required is also. Sometimes prasadam is so good, we just want to eat and become big fat belly. But Prabhupada, he could eat just what is required. Not more, not less. He would relish prasad very meditatively, not eating like, no, but very meditatively taking prasadam. An act of meditation, worship. And take just what is necessary to the body is nicely energized. So that is another characteristic. Does not eat more than required. Pure devotee. And there's so many characteristics described there. Wonderful, wonderful characteristics. A devotee is kind. That is the most important of all the qualities. He's kind. He's compassionate. He cannot tolerate to see the suffering of others. Therefore, he takes all suffering upon himself to give Krishna consciousness to others. He cannot tolerate to see people suffering. This is what the quality that Prabhupada wants to see in us. I know one time, somehow, I was lucky. I said I was at the right place at the right time and I said the right thing. and Prabhupada was so pleased with me. Oh, I can never forget them. There was a time in early days of ISKCON that some leaders thought, well, let's centralize everything. Everything in India is centralized. I think you have one management over the whole India, I understand. But outside of India, Prabhupada understood the Western mentality, and he wanted every temple to be an entity, completely separate legal entity. Prabhupada set up the ISKCON and the other in America in that way, understanding the American mood. And but then some devotees wanted to change that and centralize the whole thing. And they had a meeting where they didn't call all the GBCs. Some of the GBCs were not invited. So it was a very like a political sort of maneuver some devotees were trying to pull. And Prabhupada was very, very displeased with that. Very displeased. So he disbanded the GBC, actually. And he wrote us, just do with the temple, so each temple president, just manage your temple and report to me directly. He said, don't listen to the GBC. I've taken away their power. Prabhupada wrote us. Every temple got a letter from Prabhupada. Don't listen to the GBC, just take directions from me only. And then he taught the GBC a good lesson, and then he reinstated them. But during that era, there was talk to close down the center. I had joined the Austin Center, and Prabhupada had told me in my initiation letter, make the Austin Center a grand success. So I thought, well, here's my connection with Prabhupada. Make the Austin Center a success. And then the temple president said, well, we're going to close the center. Just go traveling and preaching. Because it was part of the whole centralization thing. At that time, they wanted to close down the small centers, consolidate everything. And I was thinking, well, if we close the center, then how will I connect with Prabhupada? My connection is to follow what he told me, and he told me to make the Austin Center a grand success. So I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I said, Prabhupada, the people here in Austin, they really need Krishna consciousness. And if we leave, then who's going to give them Krishna consciousness? I'm willing to stay, Prabhupada. They can leave, but I'll stay. Because the people here really need Krishna consciousness, dear Prabhupada. I wrote him like that. And he was so happy with me that I was thinking about the people needed Krishna consciousness. I said the right thing. Prabhupada was so happy. He chastised the temple president and glorified me. The temple president was kind of angry at me because he got chastised and I got glorified. But Prabhupada really wanted this mood in us, that we would think about the suffering people in the city, wherever you are. You should be thinking about these poor suffering people in Bangalore, how much they need Krishna consciousness, how we can expand our preaching so that all the Bangalore people will get Krishna consciousness. You have to always be thinking that way. Not just, well, we'll have our nice little, we'll enjoy getting together and chanting, let everybody else go to hell. See, that's bhajanandi. But no, goshtianandi means we have to think about saving the others. So that is kindness. Devotee is kind. So are there any other questions? Yes.
I see that Krishna is past, present and future.
Yes. Yes, Krishna, it is said that Krishna knows past, present, and future. So how does free will come into the picture? If Krishna knows something, is that the implied in your question is that if Krishna knows, then you don't really have free will because he knows what you're going to do. So actually you don't have free will because he knows. But actually that's not true. You think Krishna is limited? Krishna is not limited in any way Krishna can give you free will at the same time know what you're going to do. Krishna has the power that he could do that. Because he's unlimited, he's omnipotent. He has the ability to do anything miraculous. And that's from an ordinary standpoint. There was a whole debate that actually Rameshwar was talking to Prabhupada. There's a whole tape, maybe you heard the tape. Rameshwar was talking to Prabhupada on this very point. But how we can have free will if Krishna knows what we're going to do? That means he's really controlling us because he already knows what we're going to do. But the fact is that Krishna is unlimited, can do it. He's not limited in any way by our conceptions. Next question. Questions from the ladies? Queen Kunti and Nugas. No more questions? You are Jai Pataka followers. You must have questions. Yes.
Why does the jiva get entangled with the three modes of material nature?
Why does the jiva get entangled with the three modes of nature? Because he wants to enjoy. The three modes of nature means prison life. You are shackled in sattva-gun, rajagun, tamagun. You are your shackles. So because you wanted to enjoy independently of God, therefore you are now shackled in the modes of nature. If you're living in a kingdom and you want to overthrow the king, will he let you do that? No. He will put you in the prison and he will shackle you in the prison. Either put you to death, or put you in, shackle you deep in the deep dark dungeon, so you can't threaten his kingdom. So, you were envious of Krishna. You wanted to take over his position, so he shackled you. Sattva-gun, Rajagun, Tamagun. You're now shackled. But if you reform yourself and give up your envious mentality, then he will release you and welcome you back to his kingdom as a free citizen. Either way, you have to serve Krishna. Either way, you have to serve the government of India, isn't it? You can serve as a free citizen or as a criminal. A free citizen means you volunteer to abide by the laws of India. Criminal means you don't want to, but they will force you to. They will catch you and they will put you in prison. The laws of the prison are a lot more stringent than the laws for the free citizens. So an intelligent person will voluntarily submit to the authority of the state and be under a less stringent set of rules and regulations to follow. So an intelligent person agrees to voluntarily serve Krishna and thus get released from sattva-gun, rajagun, tamagun. Questions more? So everyone knows all the answers? If you don't know all the answers, then you should be asking questions. Otherwise, shama eva hi kevalam, you're wasting your time. Krishna consciousness means you have to move forward and become perfect in understanding and in practical application of this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If you don't do that, how will you become a pure devotee? Yes?
I feel like it's a controversial situation, where a jiva is put in the three modes of material nature and it is expected to do pure devotion. Don't you think it's like you have to go to the rain but still you don't have to get wet?
Let me try it again. Say it again.
See, the jiva is infected by these three modes of material nature.
Shackled, yes.
But still it's expected to do pure devotion. Think it's a controversial, you have to go out, but still you don't have to get wet. If it is raining outside, you have to go out, but still you don't have to get wet. That's what Bhagavad Gita is demanding. You have to do pure devotion, but you should not get affected by this. How do we understand
this? Let me see if I understand your question. You're in the modes of nature right now, but you're expected to do pure devotional service. How is that possible?
Yeah, because they're
by the mercy of Krishna. Krishna comes into the prison, or he sends his pure devotee into the prison. And the pure devotee says, would you like to become free? All right, I now bless you to become free from the influence of the modes. Now you can act in pure devotional service. That's what the pure devotee does. Prabhupada engaged us in pure devotional service. By dint of his potency of being beyond the modes of nature, we could quickly come out of the modes in his presence and his association and taste what is pure devotional service. Now, and the trick is you have to stay in that mood. You have to stay there. In Prabhupada's presence, we got a taste of what is pure devotional service, because he was emanating it like anything. We were just, by being in Prabhupada's presence and doing devotional service in his presence, we forgot all material conditions. Just to be with Prabhupada was all that mattered. It was all that mattered. I remember in Atlanta, I had been in Florida for many years. I was spoiled rotten by the nice warm weather. We came to Atlanta and this horrible cold front came in from the Smoky Mountains, and it was cold. We were staying in some dirty basement. And there was like 60 or 70 brahmacharis down there in one toilet and one shower. Where there's this huge line. It was really austere. Take your morning bath and taking rest. But because we knew that Prabhupada is here, and tomorrow morning we're going to go to the temple room, we're going to be with Prabhupada. It was just like heaven. Even though it was austere, it was cold and crowded and not very nice facilities, we were in heaven. We're here with Prabhupada. So the pure devotee creates by his own purity this an atmosphere around him which is completely transcendental to the modes of nature. And one just takes shelter of that, and you get that taste. You get that engagement outside of the modes of nature. You just have to stay there. You have to learn how to stay in that consciousness. Pure devotee gives a taste of that. And one has to learn how to stay in that dimension of consciousness beyond those. Questions more? Yeah. Yeah.
Why does Vyasa use Pariprashna?
See, the Pariprashna is... Why the Pariprashna is there? That is, let's see, my Sanskrit is not. What is that in English? Huh? Inquiry. Yes. Yes, yes. The inquiry is very important. So this is a very nice question he has asked. He has asked the question, why should I ask a question? That's pretty good, you know. Actually, that's a clever question, because I just said that you should ask questions. And he's thinking, well, why should I ask a question? And he thought, well, that's a question, so I'll just ask him. Why should I ask questions? Why does Krishna say that? See, when I'm telling you to ask questions, actually, I am not saying. Krishna is saying. Krishna is saying you should ask questions. So why does Krishna say that we should ask questions? Well, the real fact is, we always ask questions. That's our nature. So if you don't ask questions about Krishna, you're going to ask questions about Maya. We have inquisitive natures. Everyone does. Don't the birds ask so many questions? Don't you hear the birds every morning asking questions? Chirp, 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 chirp. Where's the worm? Where's the worm? Where's the worm? Where's the worm? The businessman, where's the money? 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 You see. Everyone's asking questions. So, if you don't ask questions about Krishna, then you keep asking questions about Maya because your nature is to ask questions. It's proven a little child has asked questions like anything. What's this? What's that? What's this? What's that? Every parent knows. It probably drives you crazy after a while. Millions of questions. So that's a natural tendency of everyone to ask questions. So that tendency has to be reposed in Krishna. Otherwise, it will be reposed in Maya. That's the reason. So try to ask questions about Krishna. We're so much conditioned now to ask questions about Maya that sometimes it's a little hard to ask questions about Krishna. But if we're really keen to advance and achieve pure bhakti as soon as possible, then so many questions will come. Because the questions help us to overcome obstacles. That's how we should ask questions. We should see, try to objectively see what are the obstacles that I'm experiencing on my pathway of pure devotion. And then we should ask questions to get those obstacles removed by Guru and by Senior Vaishnava. Of course, if you're already a pure devotee, then you don't have any obstacles to remove. But even a pure devotee, he will show the example for the other. Questions more? So, one minute, we'll make this the last question. Okay.
Is chanting more important or association?
Is chanting more important or association? One godbrother said that actually association is more important. But the fact is that the chanting is, you can't separate them actually. Actually, you cannot separate them. Or you can, what is the word? Sankirtan means chanting in association. The word Sankirtan means associated chanting. Chanting in association. Sankirtan. Sangha Kirtan. That's the meaning. This is the Sangha Kirtan movement. Associate and chant. Associate together for chanting. That is this movement, the Sankirtan movement. Association without chanting is hell. Chanting without association is Kanishta Adhikari. It's a neophyte. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he wrote a song chastising his own mind. He says, mind, what sort of rascal are you that you want to chant in a solitary place for profit, adoration, and distinction? So, solitary chanting is Maya, and associating without chanting is Maya. Therefore, you must associate and chant, and you must chant and associate. So they are equally important. You cannot separate, they are inseparable. That's the answer. So we'll stop here. We thank you all very much. Is Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.